This is Mark Langdon's Bets Club.
Hello and a warm welcome back to Mark Langdon's Bets Club, your one-stop shop for football betting insight. As always, so much to get through. It was a brilliant display of tipping from Mark Langdon last week, and hopefully we've got more of the same today. It's Jack Reeve and Mark Langdon back once again to guide you through proceedings. Mark, how are things?
Yeah, not bad, Jack. A little bit tired. I was working on the Champions League last night, so didn't get back until late, but hopefully still got some winners lined up.
So you were doing Aussie TV, weren't you? So they didn't sort of fly you out first class then?
No. I mean, I'm not sure the Stan Sport budget goes that far. They've got to pay for the likes of Mark Bosnich, haven't they? So, that's going to cost them enough money. But no, it was still a lot of fun. You know, it's watching both games simultaneously last night in the Champions League. And a good result in the end for Manchester United, wasn't it?
Absolutely. We'll get onto that shortly. We've had a nice lot of football to get through this midweek. Premier League action and, of course, the aforementioned Champions League action. Let's start with the Premier League games. A big win for Liverpool, 6-0 against Leeds United. And after the weekend performance of Manchester City, the title race really is back on.
Yeah, to an extent. I mean, I'm not as excited maybe as what a lot of the Liverpool fans are.
Oh, come on, Mark, let's big it up. Come on, let's sell it.
If they, if they do this and then they win at Man City, winning at Man City is not for everyone, Jack. I mean, some teams can do it, but it's not for everyone. But, it's a hard enough sort of task in itself, isn't it? And they're probably going to have to win most games here on it, until the end, because Man City are unlikely to drop too many more points. So, at least we've got one. I mean, and that's the main thing. And I think over Christmas, when Liverpool just struggled, didn't they? Dropped points against Tottenham, lost against Leicester. Then AFCON was coming up and you felt, with Salah and Mane going away, that if anything, City would pull away. So the fact that Liverpool have managed to keep tabs on, relentless City, I think is, remarkable in itself, really, that they just keep going. They've added, of course, Diaz now to their squad, which I think does, just gives them another option in terms of that final third and to score goals. And, they're looking decent at the moment, Liverpool. I don't want them to get too involved in the title race, though. One of the reasons I've backed them for the Champions League is I thought that maybe they'd give up on that and concentrate everything on the Champions League. But it's not going to be that case, is it? So it's good that we've got one, but I'm not going to go overboard and start, a couple of weeks ago, you never want to rule it out. You don't want to go, it's all over. And so now I don't want to go, what a fantastic race. It's still very much Man City's to lose in my book. And even if Liverpool get close to them, I still think that's a really good achievement, because this City team, the numbers they put up, just stupid, really.
Absolutely. In terms of Leeds, I mean, just incredibly chaotic. That's now 56 goals they've conceded this season in 25 Premier League matches.
Yeah, not great, is it? I mean, they're really missing Phillips, I think it's fair to say, sort of at the base of that midfield, and then Bamford up front. And when that because of the way they play, when it fails spectacularly. And there's no getting around that. It is the philosophy of Bielsa. He's not going to change. He's taken mainly a team of Championship players up to the Premier League. They're still not in the sort of, the bottom three. I think they should trust in what he's doing, because I think ultimately they'll win enough games doing that against maybe teams around them. If you think, back to that game against Burnley, for instance, that they won a few weeks ago, I think they'll do enough of that playing the way that they do. But, they've taken a hiding at Man City. They've taken one at Liverpool, and it probably won't be the last one either, really.
You mentioned Burnley there. We have to speak of them, and not just because they beat Spurs, but they really are putting up a fight now. And we speak about teams like Leeds and Brentford, and I know that most people aren't with me when I talk about Brentford being in a relegation scrap, but Burnley, they've now played 23 games. That's three less than Brentford, two less than Leeds, and are just 4 points and 3 points behind them sides, respectively. They're putting up a fight as we expected them to.
Yeah, I mean, they were never going to go down with a whimper, were they, under Sean Dyche? And I think, they changed their forward line, didn't they, in January? And you could argue that Weghorst, and what was it, about 10, 15 million for Chris Wood is really good business. They're defending well again. I think that's the key for them. When Tarkowski and Ben Mee are together at the heart of that defence and just making it difficult, even when they played Liverpool the other week, it was only 1-0 on a set piece, wasn't it? And there wasn't much in that game against Spurs, you know, but they've kept a clean sheet and they're always likely to get their head on something up the other end or, you know, cause a bit of chaos from a set piece, even if they're not playing that well. I still think that they'll probably go, but it's been a really impressive few weeks for them. And they've definitely dragged, you know, a number of teams into it now that were maybe thinking they were safe. And, you know, Everton, we'll get to them a bit later against Man City. I would fear for them as much as anybody, I have to say.
Absolutely. Let's talk about the Champions League then. Manchester United, a hardy 1-1 draw against Atletico Madrid. What did you make of that game?
Yeah, the old classic game of two halves, really. Atletico were all over United in the first half. United started terribly. Maguire gave away a stupid corner. Fernandes gave the ball away inside his penalty box. Pogba was awful in the first half. Ronaldo was isolated. It's all the bad things that you've seen sometimes from Manchester United. And in fairness to Ralph Rangnick, he changed that at half-time. Don't know what he said, but he clearly said something because they stepped it up. They matched Atletico's intensity and were then, without creating chances, were able to at least stop Atletico from kind of running all over them. And yet again, and it happened against Leeds and not for the first time in Rangnick's reign. And that's not easy to say, actually. but in his reign, he's made substitutions that have had an impact. And Elanga scored the goal. I would just also like to flag up a mention last week about Jan Oblak not being in very good form. I mean, I felt he should have done better. He way overcompensated his near post and allowed Elanga the opportunity. It's a very balanced tie. I thought it was balanced before. The fact that we haven't got the away goal rule in operation now, just means it for me, it's still a very close one. Wouldn't massively like to call it, but you'd say it's advantage United because they've come out of the Wanda Metropolitano with, you know, a decent result in the end.
And a comfortable result for Chelsea elsewhere against Lille. We mentioned this game before. It feels as if Chelsea play Lille about sort of 17 times a season. It was a 2-0 victory for them on this occasion. And their form of recent months has been topsy-turvy, but a nice one to just settle the nerves here.
Yeah. I mean, the early goal just sort of kills those type of games quite often, doesn't it, when the favourite gets the early goal. I saw a lot of people tipping up Chelsea in under 3.5, Chelsea in under 2.5, Chelsea to win to nil. The game kind of played out, I think, like most people expected that one too. Of course, the big decision was dropping Romelu Lukaku. I think big in that he's obviously a big name, but probably easy in given the way that he played at Selhurst. And Kai Havertz came in and scored a goal. So it was very easy for Chelsea. Don't expect them to have any problems in the return leg. And it'll be a difficult team to knock out of the Champions League because of the way they defend.
Let's have a quick mention for Juventus and also Ajax, both picking up draws in their respective matches. Who impressed you most out of those two?
Neither, to be honest, Jack. I think if anyone, it was probably Villarreal because they were much better than Juventus. It finished 1-1 that game against Juve. Vlahovic scored 30 seconds into his Champions League debut.
Nice start.
Remember I was on the Guardian podcast sort of saying, well, they've paid a lot of money for him. He's never played in the Champions League. And, you know, we don't know if he can cut it. 30 seconds later, he smashes one in. Okay, maybe he can. But Juve were awful, I thought. You know, really anti-football, turgid display from them. They were lucky to get the 1-1 in the end. And Ajax, 2-2 away from home against Benfica, is not a disastrous result. They did let down their odds on backers, but you know, they've been spoken about as dark horses to win the Champions League. They've got a lot of talent going forward. They're a fun team to watch. I'm not sure about them defensively. You know, when you're really going up against the top teams, Liverpool, Chelsea, Bayern Munich, Man City, I don't think that defence will stand firm. If you're conceding 2 to Benfica, I'm not sure what that says about your long-term prospects.
Let's take a look at our match of the day for this week. And it's a Carabao Cup final to look forward to on Sunday, 4:30 kickoff. 11-8 Liverpool, 11-5 Chelsea, 23-10 the draw. In terms of lifting the trophy, 8-11 about Liverpool, 23-20 Chelsea. Mark, where should we start with this one? Liverpool coming into it, of course, the favourites here, and in some nice form, especially after that really impressive display against Leeds. But I don't know, Chelsea just quietly going about business.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really tight game. I mean, both Premier League matches between the two finished draws this season. I mean, of course, if you remember, Reece James was sent off, wasn't he, in that game at Anfield when Chelsea were the better team, really, until that red card.
Absolutely.
And then the 2-2 at Stamford Bridge was a really exciting game of football. And I felt the draw was probably the right result there. If anything, Chelsea maybe just edged it. Certainly once they took, you know, once they recovered from the early deficit. So I think it's two of probably the best four teams in Europe right now, because I think the three Premier League teams with Man City and Bayern Munich probably are that four. So, you know, if it was the Champions League final, I don't think we'll be disappointed. So the fact it's a League Cup final, I just think it's going to be really close. You know, in terms of Liverpool, the sort of Jota and Firmino injuries, like, and whether they're available, I think is important. I mean, it's no bad thing when you're playing Salah and Mane and one other. But we've spoken, haven't we, about Liverpool in recent weeks. And one of the things that I've said I've really liked about them is the way that they've been able to change games if it hasn't been working. And, you know, to be able to rotate those forwards and that power and quality off the bench. Just wonder if it goes like the 120 minutes, if they're carrying a few of those injuries, whether that just becomes a sort of an issue, really, for Jurgen Klopp.
The difficulty with, you know, punting on cup competitions, especially the way the priority is so much on league games nowadays, you know, team news is so important. How do you, with this being a final, we obviously expect them to play their, you know, their strongest 11. Will that be the case?
No, there's talk that Klopp's going to play Keller, the goalkeeper that's played in all of the rounds and is seen as the cup keeper over Alisson. I think if you're backing Liverpool as favourites to win the trophy, I think you'd rather, even though Keller has done very little wrong since he's been in, you'd rather Alisson was there, wouldn't you? Just from a, I suppose, an experience point of view, and just that comfort of knowing you haven't got the reserve goalkeeper in. Chelsea might have their reserve goalkeeper in Kepa sometime, where he often plays in the cup games. Hard to know exactly, what Thomas Tuchel is going to do. I always take it with a pinch of salt, even what they say in press conferences, until I actually see that, you know, what teams are announced. I just think that if it is Kepa, he's proven himself in penalty shootouts. He's also proven himself. I think he's recovered quite well from those dark days when he couldn't save a shot when Frank Lampard was the manager. So I just see this as being a really tight match, even, you know, no matter about the team news. I just think that they're well balanced, and if anything, you look at that team news and do think that it's maybe a positive towards Chelsea if Mount and Reece James are sort of back and available. I don't think I'd want to back Liverpool at 8-11 to lift the trophy. I really wouldn't be surprised if it went all the way, maybe even to penalties.
Romelu Lukaku, Mark, we must speak of him. That, you know, there's been some really quite damning stats doing the rounds on social media, which I don't think ever helps the player from a personal point of view. But what's going on with him? He just really hasn't fired.
No, he doesn't fit into what they're trying to do, does he, really?
Is it as simple as that?
I think it is. I think they have tried, but I think the way that Thomas Tuchel wants that team to play, it could be argued that they're actually better with a nominal striker up there. So, I mean, Kai Havertz, I don't think he's not a false nine in the way that sort of Messi is a false nine, because he can head the ball and he can do a lot of the stuff that you would expect a normal striker to do. But he is happy to drop deep at times and, you know, he does get involved in the play. I don't think Lukaku wants to do that. I think Lukaku, you know, he wants balls over the top for him. When I watched him play for Conte, they played quick balls up to him, but Chelsea possession is much slower, more, I suppose, methodical way of trying to build up, and try and sort of just look for that space, you know, and play little passes around the corner, and Mount and Ziyech and You know, Havertz are all good at that. And I just don't know if Lukaku, if that's A, strength, and B, what he wants to do. And, you know, he's lost his confidence quite clearly. And I do think the confidence is something that you need to factor in, because I think it's quite a natural thing, isn't it, when you're maybe not as confident to not show for the ball quite as much. And then maybe the midfielder stopped looking for him. I mean, I'd be surprised if he started this game. I mean, given how bad he's been, and it would shock me, I think, if he started.
Mark, you've alluded to the fact that you think this will be a tight affair. Our audience also agree. We put out a poll on the Racing Post Sport Twitter account. 58% of people think Liverpool will lift the trophy. 42%. Of the vote went to Chelsea, so they're in agreement, which is good.
Betting. Yeah, it's not far off what the actual betting is it really for that, which I think is right. I think Liverpool are slight favourites, but wouldn't be amazed if Chelsea were celebrating come the end. I'm just going to go for the draw after 90 minutes, Jack. It's a final, so I think it'll probably be low scoring. Chelsea have only had one defeat in their last 19 matches in all competitions. That was 1-0. Away to Manchester City. Liverpool have won 9 straight. I would argue that they've maybe not beaten a huge amount in that time. The away wins at Inter and Arsenal, you know, the pick of those. But I do think that Chelsea are quite a bit better than Inter and Arsenal. So a step up for them, a difficult game, and one that could easily go all the way, and certainly I hope at least to extra time.
There we go, really looking forward to it. Premier League action starts on Friday night. Let's preview it now. Mark, I must start this section by saying a really brilliant show of tipping from you last week. Let's go through the winners. We had 7 successful tips from a possible 9. The West Ham Newcastle draw at 3s, Arsenal to win in under 3.5 goals, Watford +1 on the Asian handicap, draw, and then Chelsea. That was a very big price. Southampton over 1.5, Manchester United over 1.5 goals against Southampton. Wolves draw, no bet. And the two that lost, they were fairly close as well. Brighton, Burnley, no scorer. And Liverpool 3-0, it was 3-1. Never go against Norwich City, Mark. I've told you this before.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned when you said they're the Brighton, Burnley, quite close. I mean, you know, the favourites didn't score, did they? I went for no goal scorer. The favourites didn't score. Burnley got 3 and that bet was done nice and early. But no, there were some good other ones in there. Yeah, it's nice when the plan comes together, Jack.
Absolutely. You went against Norwich City last weekend, rightly so. They kick things off this weekend, Friday, 8 o'clock. Norwich travel to Southampton. With the recent results, a must-win game for Norwich.
Yeah, it is. I don't think they will win it, though, Jack. No. I mean,
we did beat them at home.
Yeah, you did. And, you know, I don't really want to be sort of smashing into Southampton at 8-15. You know, they've had 8 draws in 13 home games in all competitions after 90 minutes. So they're not a team that wins often enough, I don't think, to be, you know, taking those kind of prices. Even when they, you know, Championship against Coventry, it was a right old battle, wasn't it? And the FA Cup needed extra time. They've conceded exactly 1 goal, Southampton, in 5 of their last 6 at home. So I was maybe looking at a 2-1 Saints win. I don't think it'll be easy for Southampton, but I also think that they are playing well at the moment and probably should get the job done.
Yeah, I'd be in agreement. Adam Eder's injury really detrimental to Dean Smith's plan. Two teams that just strike me as red flags when it comes to punting, Leeds and Spurs. They face each other Saturday, 12:30.
Yeah, I thought Tottenham round about even money was okay. I know they got beat by Burnley. This is a very different game against Leeds. Wide open spaces. Leeds have conceded 35 goals in their last 11 Premier League matches. They've conceded the most shots on target in the league. They just don't seem sort of able to protect Melier at the moment, do they? I mean, Manchester United have barely cut loose under Ralph Rangnick. They scored 4 on a really difficult pitch in a hostile environment last week. And it felt like they had 2 easy goals, and then it wasn't until it went 2-2 they sort of had to wake up and score another 2 quite comfortable goals. So I just think Leeds are just awful at the back. Tottenham much better when they've got space to run in behind. And then, you know, if you go back not only to the Man City game, something like Leicester, another team that are wide open. I know they've left it late, but they absolutely bash Leicester for a lot of that game. They definitely deserve to win. And so, I think that this is a good opportunity for Tottenham to bounce back.
Now, one of my favourite parts about this show is the lovely little community that we've built up. And when people tweet in, now, I love it even more when people tweet in agreement with me, because it doesn't often happen. Now, G.A. Winstanley says, is it time to agree with Jack with Brentford are in relegation trouble? Now, Mark, you've dismissed this thought process for a long while now. Have we finally converted you? They take on Newcastle this weekend.
If they lose to Newcastle, yeah.
Oh, here we go.
If we say so. But my tip is Brentford draw, no bet. I think that, Brentford have stopped and other teams have started to win, and it sort of looks bad, doesn't it? Because there's that cliche about there's always one that thinks they're safe, gets dragged into it, and it looks like it could be Brentford. They've only got 1 point from their last seven games. I then looked at those games that they've played in the last seven. Southampton away, Liverpool away, Arsenal away, Man City away, Manchester United and Wolves at home. They drew with Crystal Palace. So those are those seven games. I mean, how many points realistically would you have had them in for from those seven matches had they been played as separate from each other? Because they're all together, it looks terrible. I would think with Ivan Toney back, Eriksen's been playing well in friendlies. Hopefully he'll be on the pitch soon. The fact as well that I looked in, the last three games at home dominated the opponents on the XG. I don't think things are quite as bad as they look at the moment. If they lose to Newcastle, it becomes a different story altogether. I think with Toney back against his former club, Newcastle carrying a couple of knocks as well, good opportunity for the Bees.
But, I mean, I can already hear the Geordies screaming at their podcast players, Mark, and going, Mark, it's risky for you to be writing us off after some really nice recent form.
Yeah, I mean, I was with Newcastle, wasn't I, last week at West Ham to get the point. They did get that draw there. I don't feel like, you know, that they're suddenly this great team yet. It was more a case of I thought West Ham were in a bad spot. And they're now getting quite a bit of respect, I think, from the bookmakers, Newcastle, and deservedly so, given the way they picked up. But I actually think that there's now a bit this negative vibe around Brentford is why I'm going for them, because I don't think things are quite as bad as what everybody else thinks. They have got to keep the confidence up. That's going to be, I think, Thomas Frank's biggest job is to remind the players that, you know, you've been on a hard run. You were probably going to lose a lot of those games anyway. Now's the time to, you know, this is the big one.
There we go. GA Winstanley. Mark thinking, you know, Brentford maybe in trouble after this weekend, depending on the result. Let's take a look at Brighton against Aston Villa next. Now, Mark, I follow quite a few Aston Villa fans on Twitter, and there's been some real grumbles about their recent performances.
Yeah, and rightly so. I think that they've become unbalanced. I thought they had a really good thing going before Coutinho arrived. I'm not saying it's Coutinho's fault necessarily, because, you know, he's shown in moments what he can do, but just in fitting him into the team, it becomes quite difficult, I think, and they've maybe just lost everything else about what they were doing. I'm going to go for Brighton to win this game. Obviously, hopeless result for them last week against Burnley. Neither team's in great shape, but I think overall this season, Brighton have been better than Aston Villa, if, you know, in terms of the whole season. And I'm not sure that's fully reflected in the odds, given the home advantage for Brighton.
Palace against Burnley. Mark, did you see Bruce's tweet last night with him at the Palace game, Palace-Watford?
Yeah, with Dave Horton.
How the other half live, hey?
The prawn sandwich brigade.
I mean, you're doing Aussie TV. We've got Bruce in the prawn sandwich brigade at the Palace game. What was I doing? I was sat on a Greater Anglia train travelling to London. I mean, what am I doing wrong?
Was your first class?
No, not even that. I didn't even get a table seat.
Oh, there you go.
Not good, is it?
Well, no, it's not. I don't think this will be a good game either, that Sellers, because I think Burnley, now having got those wins, will think a draw at Palace is not a bad result. Keeps that sort of run going. They've only conceded two goals in their last six matches. That includes games against Arsenal, United, Liverpool and Spurs. So defending really well. Have Palace got enough about them to break them down? They are a bit of draw specialists, aren't they, the Eagles? So I'll go for a share of the spoils.
How about Manchester United against Watford?
Yeah, I suspect that United will win. I mean, it's a quick turnaround from what, you know, the Champions League game in Madrid. I was looking at draw half-time, Man United full-time. Six of United's last eight Premier League wins, they've been level at the break, and it kind of plays into them being a team of two halves, aren't they? They can't quite put a whole 90-minute performance together yet, but good in spells. Hopefully, it'll be the second half.
5:30 on Saturday, Everton against Manchester City. Really intriguing clash, this one.
Yeah, I mean, I fear for Everton in this game. I think we'll get a big reaction from Man City to losing to Tottenham, a game that, you know...
Were they off colour in that Tottenham game, or were just Tottenham really good?
A little bit of both. I think defensively, I mean, they were given a good going over, weren't they, by Harry Kane, who absolutely just bossed them. I felt like, without creating loads of chances, they did a number of things right. I think, you know, more often than not, they probably still win that game, don't they? You know, certainly wouldn't have expected to lose it. Teams can't win every week. You know, like this is like, you know, even was it 18 wins in 20 or 19 in 21, something like that going into the game. At some stage, you just lose. It's just like, it's just football, isn't it? You know, you can't win every week. I think they'll win this week, though. If you do like the bet builder, Man City to win and over 1.5 goals, it comes in at about twos on. And I don't put up many twos on shots, Jack, but I think that is fair enough here. Everton were an absolute joke at Southampton last week. Shots on target, 11-0 to Southampton.
Blimey.
I watched the game, actually. I was up early on Sunday morning. I watched the game on Sky. They sort of showed like the full rerun of it. And I honestly couldn't believe how bad Everton were.
What's happened then? Because their victory over Leeds felt like they may have turned some kind of corner.
Well, you maybe just mentioned it there, Jack. Leeds. I mean, Leeds are getting pumped by everyone, aren't they?
And fair enough.
You know, it was at home. I know this one's at home, but they've not shown up away. And I mean, I don't see them being able to cope with Man City in midfield. They were so bad. You know, just Gomez came on at half time. I'm surprised he lasted in the 90 minutes. Until the end, he should have been taken off. He was terrible.
Can we finally agree that the hype around Frank Lampard just isn't justified?
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to be... I thought he did a steady job at Derby and a steady job at Chelsea. I mean, Chelsea improved quite a bit when he left. So I suppose that was, you know, below par in some respects. But I don't know. I mean, I don't think he's done a disastrous job in his two managerial places.
I'm not saying that, but it's
not enough to get the Everton job.
Well, that's the thing. I'm not saying it was disastrous, but there was almost a narrative from those looking at Everton going, oh, well, they're automatically safe now because they've got Frank Lampard. I just didn't think that was a fair assessment.
You know, they probably were sort of better off sticking with Rafa. I know the fans sort of got to the stage where that was almost impossible. But if someone said to me, who's going to get more points for Everton from now until the end of the season, Benitez or Lampard, I would have gone Benitez, I think.
Absolutely. Just the one Premier League game on Sunday due to the Carabao Cup final at 4:30. West Ham take on Wolves at 2:00, Mark.
Yeah, I mean, I think West Ham are a bit short here at about 11 to 10. I'm going to go for Wolves or draw, double chance. Not ideal that they're playing Arsenal on Thursday, and we're speaking before that game. So hopefully, injury-wise, they come out of it okay. And fitness, you know, West Ham have had a free week and they've played Thursday. So there's a couple of kind of negatives there for Wolves. But fact is, they've only lost four of their last 19 games in the Premier League, and three of those were to Liverpool, Man City and Arsenal. So, I think they're just such a difficult team to beat. We've seen them win away at Tottenham and Man United quite recently. If they get a goal, you know, you almost feel like you might as well give up against them because Kilman and Cody really solid at the back. Jose Sarr's got the best save percentage in Europe's top leagues this season. So they're just a really frustrating team to try to beat.
Now, you can hear in our voices that we've been sounding rather chipper today, and that's because we know that Dan Childs is back. Let's get his EFL best bets now.
He's back. He has a longer half term than any of the school kids that he's supposed to be looking after. Welcome back, Dan Childs. You have a good break?
Yeah, not too bad. Yeah, lovely.
Gadget to get back to the EFL now, though?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, can't wait.
Right, well, we've got quite a few questions lined up for you. First of all, from Bill, and he wants to know your thoughts on a Bolton top six finish. You're obviously flying at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, Bolton, it's a little bit similar, I think, what's going on this season to last season when they went on a real amazing recruitment drive in January. And I think they were 19th after 24 games in League Two, and then completely brought a lot of good players in January and ended up finishing third, going up automatic. There's sort of a similar thing playing out this season where they've recruited really strongly in January. They've gone from 18th to 10th in League One with a run of eight wins in 10 matches. An incredible revival from Bolton. They're still 5 points outside the playoffs, and it's so competitive there. They've still got some big teams they need to overtake. You think in the likes of sort of Sunderland, Sheffield Wednesday, Ipswich, they need to get above. I think they may fall just short. I mean, you're looking at the tally, they'll probably need 75 points, probably going to have to win maybe eight of their remaining 12 games. I know the recent form suggests they could do that, but it's hard to keep that going, you know, for another 10, 12 games. So I think they'll be just outside the playoffs.
Sure. I mean, I don't want to speak for Bill. I think he was talking more from a value point of view. So you could see them giving a good run for the money in terms of that.
Absolutely.
Top six,
and they could make it. I mean, you certainly wouldn't rule them out. You know, just, if I was picking,
they're about they're about 5-1 for a top.
Well, if I was laying out a table now, end of the season, I'd probably say that they finish about seventh. So I mean, they could get very close. Absolutely.
Okay, cool. And then in League Two, Stuart says, "Have your relegation thoughts changed?" We've had quite a few questions, haven't we, on the League Two relegation picture in recent weeks? But he just wants to know if they've changed from Scunny and Oldham, and particularly Oldham, given their recent upturn in form.
Yeah, I think Oldham are going to survive now. I mean, the Chesurrection, as it's been called, is in full swing. I mean, they've five games unbeaten, 10 points from the last four matches for Oldham. I think they've always had some decent attacking players, the likes of Davis Keeler-Dunn and Dilan Bahambula, you know, that can score them goals. That's half the battle. If you can get a manager in that gets them to start battling a bit more and get them organised, he seems to have done that. The fans are on side. There's been bigger attendances in recent games, which makes a huge difference. Club's been so kind of disjointed and the fans, you know, really loggerheads with the owners for a long time, but they seem to be on board. I think they'll stay up. I think I would kind of fear for Carlisle, who have actually dropped into the bottom two. No winning eight games under Keith Millen at the moment, and they're shipping goals at an alarming rate. They've conceded at least two goals in each of their last six games. So I think Carlisle will probably go. I think Scunthorpe are pretty much doomed. I mean, they've had eight defeats in their last 10 games. The initial revival under Keith Hill hasn't really continued. I think they'll probably finish bottom.
Yeah, I mean, Carlisle obviously hoping for that new manager bounce with Paul Simpson. They're 17-10 to be relegated. Oldham out to 5-2 now. Colchester, one of the teams not too far from me, they're 4-1. Stevenage 13-2. Barrow 9-1. And Walsall 16-1. A team that I haven't mentioned because they're 250-1. Bradford just appointed Mark Hughes. I mean, first of all, I mean, where on earth did that come from? And secondly, how do you think he'll get on?
It's a strange one, isn't it? I mean, you've got to, you know, have a bit of respect for a guy that he's managed six Premier League clubs. So, you know, you don't get to do that without, you know, having, you know, some kind of managerial acumen and ability. Did quite well at Blackburn, didn't he?
It was a long time ago.
Yeah, you're trying to stretch him for reasons why they've done it. I mean, I agree with you. I can't really see, you know, the logic in it. I mean, he's not going to have, you know, certainly any up-to-date knowledge of League Two. I mean, they're probably in a situation where they think, you know, maybe they're looking to just placate the fans by appointing a big name. They're not going to make the playoffs, highly unlikely to be relegated. But I mean, it's the players that's the issue. You know, they've won nine games in 33 matches. I mean, it's not as if Hughes can you know, do anything in terms of a transfer window until the summer. don't see, you know, imagine any you know, big revival coming on until then. I'm a bit surprised. I don't know why teams in this their situation don't go for somebody that's got knowledge of the leagues. Somebody like 20 mile up the road, Simon Weaver's done an amazing job at Harrogate. I'm thinking of Michael Duff as well, who was based, you know, played for Burnley for many years. So, you know, came from, you know, spent a lot of time in the north and did an amazing job with Cheltenham and has got a mid-table in League One. They would be the sort of names that I would be looking at if I was, you know, the running the show at Bradford.
Sure. Okay. And then best bets for this weekend, please, Dan.
I've got three, one in each of the EFL divisions. Starting
fire
off with
away, yeah.
Bournemouth at Shade of Odds on 4-5, which I think looks a fantastic price at home to Stoke. Stoke's kind of playoff chances, I mean, they virtually completely disappeared, been on a really poor run, lost 2-1 at home to Luton on Wednesday. I mean, that was really, they were flattered by a 2-1 defeat looking at the stats of that game. Luton won the shot count 12-5. All doesn't seem to be quite well at the moment at Stoke and Bournemouth. I mean, they've had that astonishing cup defeat, didn't they, at home to Bournemouth? But they've won three games in a row in the Championship. Look really solid now in the top two. I think they'll go up quite comfortably automatically. Done some good business in January, bringing in the likes of Sarika Dembele, Nat Phillips and Todd Cantwell. I think they'll beat Stoke comfortably.
And then go fire away, Dan.
Yeah, I'll just carry on. I mean, Sheffield Wednesday, I fancy in League One. Again, Shade of Odds on at home to Charlton. I mean, Sheffield Wednesday, massive team at this level. They're on a roll now, starting to punch their weight. Five wins in the last six games. Think that looking a lot more solid at the back, which was an issue since they've signed Jordan Story on loan from Preston. And they're always going to score plenty of goals with the players they've got. Charlton are kind of going the other way under Johnny Jackson now. Four defeats in a row. To be fair to Johnny Jackson, he's had a lot of injury problems, including especially with a front line. Mason Burstow, Chucks and EK, Connor Washington all out for the weekend. Jaden Stockley's a major doubt as well, so hard to see them making an impact at Hillsborough. But League Two, I'm going to look at Mansfield on the draw, no better, around evens away to Bradford. I'm not so sure that, I mean, Mark Hughes coming in, it may lift the crowd, you know, a big name coming in. But as I mentioned earlier, with the transfer window being shut, still they're going to be the same group of players. They've simply not been good enough. Lost the last three games. Most recently, lost 3-1 at home to Harrogate Town on Tuesday. Only nine wins, league wins all season for Bradford. I mean, I can't believe that Mansfield, on most books, are outsiders to win this game. I mean, they've been absolutely flying for a couple of months now. Unbeaten in 12 games. And a Nigel Clough. They're looking even stronger now since kind of late January signings of Matty Longstaff on loan from Newcastle and Jamie Murphy, a talented winger from Scotland, on loan from Hibernian. I think they're going to have a strong finish to the season, Mansfield. I fancy them for the top three and I fancy them to win this weekend.
Good to have Dan back. Thanks so much, as always, for his EFL advice. If you want to read more and just get more sporting goodness in general, the Racing Post Sport website is for you. Just type it on Google. You'll find it easy enough. Mark, let's get an overview of your best bets for this week. And we'll start with your prop shop.
Yeah, Heung-min Son, 11-2, score first against Leeds. Leeds, they're conceding way too many goals. And I just look at that space that they leave, like between the defence and the goalkeeper and between their fullbacks and centre-backs and the centre-backs and the midfield. And you can almost see Kane dropping deep, putting through balls through and, you know, Son running onto them, can't you? So, yeah, Heung-min Son at 11-2.
Often with sides that, you know, conceding goals so frequently, you kind of see them shore up a little bit in following games. You just don't see that happening with Leeds.
No, I don't think they'll. I mean, if, you know, if they keep a clean sheet, it won't be because they've changed their tactics. It'll just be because, you know, either the opposition have been wasteful or they've played well. Because when they play well, you know, it can be difficult to play against. Even again, you know, we've been quite harsh on Leeds, I suppose, in sort of this show. But when it plays, like for a little while against Man United, they played great. But it's just hard to keep that going for, you know, the whole game. But, you know, in terms of Son, I mean, in terms of, you know, the games last season against Leeds, he scored in both matches. So, you know, there's good opportunity, I think, there for the more Sonny delights.
Very good. Sorry, Leeds fans. Let's get your long shot then.
Yeah, so going to the Bundesliga, Wolfsburg. They're playing away to Borussia Mönchengladbach. Gladbach beaten 6-0 by Dortmund at the weekend. not been a good season for them. It's not been a good season for Wolfsburg either, but they've been decent since they changed their team around in January transfer window. In February, they've beaten Greuther Fürth 4-1. They beat Frankfurt 2-0. They should have beaten Hoffenheim as well. They 1-0 up, conceded a couple of late goals. They've got, you know, Vind and Kruiser up front now, both brought in January. Decent players. And boy, it was very topical that Wind scored last week, given the gales that were blowing around everywhere. But it wasn't enough of a victory. But I think Gladbach are a team to oppose at the moment.
Did you have any sort of trampolines flying around the garden or anything, Mark?
Yeah, the trampoline flew into the corner. It's up against the shed and has remained there because I just can't be bothered to move it. It's upside down up the shed.
Are you one of those parents who kind of take the trampoline sometimes and have a go yourself, or is it solely for the kids' entertainment?
Yeah, I'm the latter.
I love the energy you're bringing today, Mark. Have you sort of had a few strong cups of tea or something?
I think it's a lack of sleep, really. I might just be a bit giddy from a lack of sleep. I did TalkSport on Sunday night, and having got a call about 1 o'clock in the afternoon saying no one else can do it, can you do the show? And then I did Aussie TV last night. So I think it's a lack of sleep. I'm just gone way too giddy.
You're a man in demand at the moment, aren't you?
For sure, yeah. I'm trying to cut back, but at the same time, just the offers are too tempting to ignore.
Absolutely brilliant. Give me a treble that's too tempting to ignore this weekend.
Yeah, I found it a bit difficult because I'm not a huge amount of fancy, but Man City and over 1.5 goals at Goodison, I think for the reasons we mentioned, but most important stat from all of those was that Everton conceded 11 shots on target to Southampton. I mean, imagine if they do that to Man City. Barcelona against Athletic, over 2.5 goals. Athletic absolutely destroyed Sociedad in the Basque Derby last weekend, got a lot of decent players going forward. But I've mentioned this more than once on the pod that I think Barcelona have improved their attack quite considerably in January. Scored 4 at Valencia last week. So I'm expecting over 2.5 goals there. And then finally, the Maurizio Sarri derby, Lazio against Napoli. Both teams to score in that game. Napoli will fancy their chances of winning the game, but Lazio have scored in 11 of their last 12 since a 4-0 defeat at Napoli, actually. So hopefully the goals can be a little bit more balanced this time around.
And the Nap, the strongest bet of the week, Mark.
Yeah, I'm going to almost apologise for putting up a twos on shot as the Nap.
If it's a winner, Mark, we don't care.
Well, yeah, I think Man City in over 1.5 against Everton. I wish there was more to go at this week, but I think it is a tough one, so I'll stick with that.
Okay, good stuff. Time for the questions. Always my favourite part of the show, this. Let's start with Royce. And he asks, Mark, do you have any... do any of the Serie A outright prices interesting you? I'm looking at Juve at 20-1.
I think it is interesting because I think only one team in the top half of the table won last weekend. So they're all kind of slipping up. From a betting point of view, though, I do just still expect Inter to win it. And, you know, their odds on, and I think they deserve to be beaten 2-0 by Sassuolo at the weekend. Sassuolo have been one of my favourite teams down the years. They're just underrated side, are capable of doing that against the good sides. Brozovic was missing from the game. I think that those were excuses, that, you know, valid ones. They would play Champions League. They're likely to be out of the Champions League. I just think Inter will win it. Juve, I mean, because they're Juventus, you feel like they've got a chance, but they're just not playing well enough. I mean, even against Torino, I thought in the derby last week, I thought Torino were the better team. So, no, it wouldn't be. I don't want to put anyone off 20-1 shots, but I think Inter will win Serie A.
I'll be honest, Mark, I don't watch too much Italian football. I mean, what's been the reason for Juventus' slight downturn?
A lot of people blame Cristiano Ronaldo, not him necessarily, but because they spent so much money on Cristiano Ronaldo, it then meant that sort of other areas of the team were lacking. You know, they went down this route of giving like big, massive contracts to free transfers, Ramsey, Rabiot, and quite a few others. And that has proven actually to be quite expensive because I haven't quite worked out. And I also think that their managerial choices haven't been great. And Max Allegri, never his biggest fan. I was a bit surprised they went back for him. Hasn't got sort of a process or a philosophy. Never trust managers that sort of only talk about winning and not how they get the results. And he's one of those. So, that would be a concern. They've got Vlahovic now. So, I mean, he definitely adds something to them up front. But I just think they're lacking in too many other areas. And they've got a big old gap between them and Inter and also AC Milan at the top at the moment.
There you go, Royce. Mark, certainly not putting you off the 20-1 about Juve. John wants to know, is it essential that Spurs keep Conte? The comments in the week were interesting, Mark.
I don't listen to him anymore, to be honest.
You were listening to him after the Man City game.
No, look, this is what Conte
does.
Come
on.
No. Conte always causes conflict. Like it's kind of his style of management. You know, it's how he puts pressure on the players. It's how he puts pressure on himself. You know, it's how he puts pressure on the owner or the sporting director. It's just what he does. He's always done it and he'll always do it. And so I tend not to listen too much to what he's saying in the press conferences. When you say, is it essential that Conte stays at Spurs? Essential for who? If we're talking about is it essential for Tottenham, I don't think it's essential. I think there are other managers, not as good as Conte. I mean, Conte is the best manager that Tottenham can get, but I don't see him staying there for too long. And, you know, so therefore can't be essential, can he? I mean, you know.
Do you not just need a bit of stability though, a bit of consistency? Just to ride it out a bit.
Yeah, but that's not going to come with Conte, is it? Because he'll be off. Probably, you know, he's not going to be there in 3 years' time, is he? So you're not building like this slow, like Pochettino process stuff. You're almost trying to do a cheat code of win a trophy while you've still got Kane and you've got Son kind of in still in their peak time. So I don't think, to answer the question, it's not essential because there are other people that can do a job, not necessarily as good a job, but they can do a good job.
Francis asks, Pukki versus Weghorst. Now, I assume he means in terms of footballing capabilities.
I think it was a fight. I thought it was as a fight.
Oh, okay.
I was leaving it for you. You know Timu much more than me.
I mean, Weghorst just massive, isn't he?
Nasty.
I mean, I don't watch too much sort of boxing. I guess height isn't always the determining sort of factor of success, is it?
Yeah, he's nasty, though, Weghorst. Is Pukki quite a nice guy, or is he...
Well, I think you'd be, if he still had the beard, you'd be slightly intimidated, almost like a, you know, an old school scrapper. But I was also reading in the week, Mark, I didn't realise this, that Weghorst comes from one of the most wealthy families in Europe. Really, really kind of wealthy background. Not that that makes a difference when it comes to fighting.
No, if anything, it makes you think that, you know, you'd want someone that's maybe had to... fight for it that little bit more. Horrible character, Weghorst. I'll go for Timu Pukki.
To win a fight?
Well, just as a person.
I just quickly, on the footballing sense here, Timu Pukki often comes in for quite a bit of criticism when he gets to the Premier League, because I think Norwich fans are so used to him scoring, you know, 25, 30 goals in the Championship, and then that obviously tails off in the Premier League. And he missed a chance against Liverpool at the weekend that would have put us 1-0 up. And I know we did eventually go 1-0 up. But I just think with a player like Timu Pukki in a side like Norwich City, he may get one or two chances a game.
Yeah,
if he doesn't score one of them, he's then instantly criticised. You look at Mo Salah, he probably had, I don't know, 6-7 good chances against Norwich and scored one of them. I just think that the difference between chances created for these players are often overlooked.
It is for sure.
There we go. I just wanted to get that off my chest. Thanks for, thanks for listening. Bit of therapy there. This is a good question coming in from, how are we pronouncing this?
Good old Gil? Good old Gil?
Yeah, we'll go with that. Well done.
Good old Jill, yeah.
Good old Jill. Should Sky Bet be allowed to have markets on players and transfers when they also own Sky Sports, who can create monumental shifts in those markets with rumours, etc.? It has to be a conflict of interest.
I'm glad somebody's mentioned this, because the amount of times I see this on social media and I send it like punching my face. Like,
oh, really?
Yeah. It's not... For starters, Sky Bet are now not under Sky Sports. Nothing to do with Sky Sports. They're part of the Flutter kind of umbrella, aren't they? With Betfair, Paddy Power, and whatever. I mean, we're talking here about a multi-billion-pound sort of industry. Absolutely no conflict of interest whatsoever. But even before. Do you honestly think that Sky Sports would allow themselves to ruin their credibility by creating a transfer rumour that allowed 10 people to have a fiver on Weghorst going to Burnley or whatever? You know, it's just, you can't do monumental shifts. I think part of the problem here is that there was a time when I think Bookie PR went way too far with, you know, monster gamble on this and, you know, hefty payout on, you know, next manager. Realistically, I'm not talking about every single case, but most cases, they're not monumental shifts. You know, they're small stakes, and it doesn't take much to move the market. I think there is a different question on whether you should be able to bet on player transfers, because we've seen players get into trouble with this quite recently. You know, you tell your wife, she tells someone, oh, we're going to Madrid. He tells someone else, and all of a sudden that's seen as insider info. Mm. And that can't be right, at all. So I think there's a separate question on whether you should be able to bet on player transfers. I think that we've maybe reached a stage where I wouldn't mind if that was completely banned. But please, for anyone that's listening, don't be fooled. Sky Bet are not part of Sky Sports, so there's no part of that anyway. But even before, it's just no chance, absolutely no chance.
On another note, though, Mark, you've often been quite hesitant when it comes to advising, you know, managers to go to a certain club, for example, yeah. Haven't you?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Because, you know, there's always someone that knows more than you. Well, normally there's someone that knows more than you. If you know more than the market, maybe that's the time to bet. But realistically, how often is that going to be? Not often, is it? I mean, you know, if you think you're a bookmaker, you know, you can see all the bets that are coming in. If there's like, I don't know, you know, maybe some well-known journalists start betting a manager to go somewhere. Mm. You know, stuff like that. You get the inside info that way, or there might be a bit where I'm trying to think what might happen is some, like, the accounts might have really good records of Northwest clubs, and so I think that there would be times when bookmakers do, you know, you're not betting with all the information, because sometimes you know, there's just stuff you don't know, and I wouldn't believe everything you read on the internet, that's for sure.
I think that's a good rule for life, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
I always get a sort of anxiety when I have to read these Twitter usernames with the...
Oh, Anderley.
Right, there we go. This is a great question. Who would make the better top flight manager, and why, out of myself or Bruce Millington? Now, I'll let you answer this, Mark, and I guess it comes from who motivates you better? Myself or Bruce? When it comes to the start of a podcast and you really want to get up for it, energy in the voice, who are you turning to?
Well, I mean, what I would say, Jack, is only one of those sent me a Christmas card this year. So,
there we go.
That's a tick in your box. What I would say is I don't think either would last a huge amount of time. I think one area where Bruce would definitely have the edge on you, Jack, would be in the half-time hairdryer. So I don't know if that would make him better or worse top flight manager, but I certainly wouldn't fancy a half-time team talk if we were 4-0 down somewhere, that's for sure.
I think I would try and find my kind of way out with it with I don't really like conflict. I think Bruce would be more up for a real kind of battle with the captain or something.
What you're saying, you play like 15 players. That's what they said, that who, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer used to just tell everyone they were playing because he didn't like conflict. Like they get like people like Lingard thinking they were playing next week because he'd had a really good conversation with Ole, but he was having that same conversation with everyone. Yeah.
Do you think Bruce would be the tracksuit manager and I'd be the suit wearer?
I would have thought you were a tracksuit.
No, I'm not a fan of a tracksuit.
I am, but you're sort of, yeah, the younger, fresher face ones tend to wear the track suits, but you'd go full kind of, or would you go, you wouldn't go Tony Pulis then?
Oh, no, not at all. No. I think I went to a high school that the head teacher's motto was kind of dress smart, think smart. So I've kind of tried to take that through life and failed quite often. Well, it sounds as if by Mark's answer there, I'm sacked for next week's podcast. So Bruce, clear your calendar for Thursday. There we go. Thanks as always for all of your questions on Twitter. Follow at Mark Langdon and at Racing Post Sport, and you can feature in future episodes. I always say it, I'm going to say it again. Mark's put a lot of selections up during the course of this podcast. Please don't feel the need to back them all. Only ever gamble with money that you can afford to lose. We'll be back again next week for another edition of Mark Langdon's Bets Club.